having a slideshow with pictures, I'm always looking forward to see that for multiple reasons. But tonight was a little different when I walked into the place, because I don't know if you guys noticed, but did you see the portrait in the lobby? The big old portrait. I hope you didn't miss it. But if you didn't see it, you need to, on the way out, you need to see it again. It's just beautiful. Typically, I don't get to see things like that. How many of you notice on the big portrait, besides the beautiful picture, Ophelia's picture, and the dates, you know, the birthday, and also obviously now as we celebrate her life, the ending of her life on earth. How many of you notice the little two pictures at the bottom of the portrait? Anybody notice what it was? What was it? ¿Qué es lo que vieron abajo? ¿Qué es lo que estaba? Bingo in. Yeah. I know it's called chalupa here, but I call it lotería. That's just the way I grew up, a little different on that regard. But you guys notice those in there? Okay, so I'm just going to make the assumption that those two pictures, they represent, this is what I think it represents. It represents a lot of reunions. And those two pictures remind me, which also the pictures on the slideshow remind me, that whether it was a birthday cake, a graduation, I saw a football player in there. I saw a bunch of events and socials, and I take you into the portrait outside with the chalupa and the bingo. The interesting thing about those things is that they have meaning because who you play with, the people that you did or you took the pictures with. In other words, I mean, some of you will be in graduations this weekend. Some of you probably had graduations. I have my middle child, Rebecca. It's a senior in high school. So on Friday, she has a banquet for the band. She plays in the band. And we're having a little conflict in the family with the schedule because my son plays basketball and has a tournament in San Antonio over the weekend. So we're kind of spread all over the place. But what I'm trying to tell you is, whether it's a banquet for my daughter after 4 years, whether it's her graduation coming up from high school, or my son playing basketball, you know, I've been watching basketball for a long time. I remember back in the early 90s, mid-90s, you know, the Michael Jordan era. But once my son started playing, basketball took a little different twist for me. It wasn't just a sport. It was just the fact that now it's my son playing it. And the same thing happens for many other experiences. You know, you look at playing bingo or any event that you saw, you know, on the screen. It's about the people that you relate with, that you do life with. Wouldn't you agree with that? It's about who you do those things with. And tonight, when we come and we celebrate Ophelia, it's pretty obvious that this represents the people that she obviously loved and that she spent time with. Between the beginning of the video is the wedding, right? And I don't know if you guys got a chance to read it, but did you notice how many years of marriage? That's pretty remarkable. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, it's a whole commitment of walking through life together. See, the interesting thing that I want you to think with me for a second is that the Bible verse that I asked you to read with me at the beginning, which is at the bottom of the program, that passage from John chapter 14 is the beginning of the end. That passage of John chapter 14 is the beginning of the conversations and the narratives that literally is going to move Jesus within a few hours into an illegal trial, is going to be taken captive by the Romans, and is going to be beaten to death and eventually put on a Roman cross. And within a few days, he's going to be laid down on a graveside. And you know the story. What happens on the third day? He comes back from the dead, right? So I don't know if you can just look at this passage with me one more time, but this passage is read in what is called the upper room. They're celebrating the Passover, Pascua. We call it Pascua. It's basically the remembrance, the celebration of God creating a way to take the people of God from 400 years of slavery in Egypt into the journey of the promised land. The guy that is in charge of that, you know, extremely important deal is a guy by the name of Moses. And it's our remembrance. So they're in this celebration. And the interesting thing when you read these words is that Jesus is having this conversation with what is called his inner circle, his disciples. And it's just them and Jesus. It's a boys' night out type of deal. And again, they don't know this and they refuse to accept this. But what Jesus is doing, he's basically saying goodbye. That's what he's doing. Now, again, this goodbye is the beginning of something beautiful. Because without this goodbye, without this temporary separation, there is no hope for you and I. And when I use the word hope, which is a four-letter word, I'm not speaking of wishful thinking. You know, many of us, we hope for a better season for the Cowboys. That's not the type of hope I'm talking about. The word describes hope as the word certainty. Certainty. There's some things that are just certain. So when it comes to Jesus saying goodbye to the disciples, he's speaking from the words of certainty. He's not speaking just hoping in a sense of, you know, one day somehow, you know, we have this romanticized feeling, this really true desire for things to turn this way. He's given them a word of certainty. And the certainty is based on the fact that Jesus is about to prove to the world, to you, to them, to me, to all of us, that he was not simply, I want you to listen to this, he wasn't simply a rabbi, a teacher, a Jewish religious leader that spoke about God. Jesus is God who was teaching to people. He is God himself made flesh for us. So with that being said, just look at the passage very quickly. Because he begins with an admonition. He begins with something that is basically implying, stop doing it. What is it? Look at your little handout. He's basically saying, stop having your hearts being troubled. In other words, the disciples were already feeling and sensing and experiencing a troubled heart. Have you ever been there where your heart just aches? And sometimes, many times, even words are not enough to express the feeling. Have you ever been at the place where the grief is just beyond your ability to carry? See, some people, and again, if you come from church background, you may not come from church background, wherever you come from, I'm just here to put my disclaimer, my cards on the table. If you have ever heard this thing from preachers or maybe family members, maybe people that know you, and people may say that God will never give you more than you can carry. Have you heard that before? That's a lie. That's a lie. I'm sorry to break it down to you. It is a lie. There's many occasions where the situation in life is beyond your ability to carry. Have you heard of the word depression and anxiety and sometimes even the concept of suicide? You know what I'm talking about? That's exactly where this takes you, in moments that is just beyond your ability to carry, to really, you know, being able to function. But this is exactly what's happening. The disciples are in a situation where it's just depressing because Jesus kept on talking that he's about to go. And then Jesus kept on talking not only of his departure, but how he was going to go. Like the way he was going to depart. And it's not fun because if anything that the disciples knew, they knew about suffering. They knew about crucifixion. They knew about Romans abusing the Jews. I mean, it's like, come on, time out. We have seen you walk with you and you walk on water. You raise the dead from the graveside. You heal, you know, the blind and you make the lame walk again. How can you keep on talking of this departure? Which, by the way, there is no way you can depart from us because as far as we know, the way we understand the concept of a Messiah, of the promised one, is for him to take care of this political, governmental, sociological situation and get the Romans out of here because they're oppressing us. And nothing has changed and you keep on talking about going. So it's like Jesus' message is just completely contradictory to their perception. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been in a place where you thought that God was supposed to do something for you and he did not deliver the goods? Have you ever wondered if God actually exists? Because as far as you know, if God exists, really existed, I mean, there's no way this is taking place, whatever that may be. You know, tragedy, difficulties, confusion, whatever that may be. Well, Jesus simply says, you got to stop doing that. Now, here's the thing, though. because Jesus obviously is Jesus and he knows how to speak to his boys, he tells them the why. And look at what he says. He says, this is the reason why you need to stop. You need to stop having a heart of trouble. The antidote of your troubled heart is not simply the absence of whatever is causing the trouble. In other words, the antidote of a heart that is despair, that is depressed, that is with anxiety, is not simply the absence of whatever is causing that. Because, see, if God was the God that simply changed circumstances for you, he wouldn't be God. He will be a genie of the lamp. He will be the God that you can come up and say, well, what do you need? No, that's not God, right? We know that that's not God. The reason why he says you got to stop having a heart of trouble is because since you believe in God, you must also believe in me. Because here's the good news again. I'm not just a Jewish teacher that is speaking about God with eloquence and with power and with understanding. I am literally God. And he goes and says, let me explain to you what I mean by believing in me. Believing in me implies, here's how you are going to have to believe in me, is that although you want a God that changes circumstances, and although I can change circumstances for you, that is not how this is going to work for all of us. And by the way, just quick parenthesis. The reason why circumstances many times do not change, many times they do not change, is simply because we lived in a world that is broken. We live in a world that even being at a funeral home is the perfect scenario that although we physically die, it's a reminder that as we sit in this place and we celebrate the life of Ophelia, Ophelia is the perfect example to remind us that we are not a body with a soul, that we are a soul with a body. What does that mean? Here's the implication. The implication is that every single one of us, we will live forever. That what you see today by having a physical body on a casket is not the cessation of a life. In other words, this is not a period. This is a coma. This is simply the separation of the spirit with the body. But the spirit lives forever. And by the way, I'm moving ahead of what I'm trying to tell you, but I want you to hear the language of Jesus, because if they were troubled prior to Jesus speaking, they're going to get more confused. Look at what he says on verse 2. He says, "In my Father's house has many rooms." He's using the language of family. He's not just speaking of a God or the God or some source or some kind of a, you know, being out there. He's using the language of family. If anything brings us together tonight, it's exactly family. Right? That's what we're here. I mean, what else is here to do? It's about family. And by the way, again, this is so difficult to read tonight, because we are obviously reading ancient documents. These things were written 2,000 years ago. We are looking at this from a rear view mirror versus the windshield. You know what I mean by that? I mean, in other words, this is history, but we know how the movie ends. We know what's going to happen after. I just told you, you know, he goes and, you know, gets the whole crucifixion thing. But here's what I'm trying to tell you. This is so difficult to read, and for Jesus to use the language of father, because again, I don't know what your background is. I'm a father of three. I obviously have a father. I have a dad. And it seems to me, this is what I'm trying to tell you. It seems to me that the deeper the relationship is, the harder potentially it becomes. There's so many of us that we have made a decision not to love anyone because we do not want to get, say it, we don't want to get hurt again, right? So we'd rather just, No, I just don't want to go there, because the last time that I tried, the last time that I trusted, the last time that I loved, it didn't go well. Well, here's the thing, though. I'm with you, and no one is immune of betrayal and heartaches and difficulties and having a heart that is troubled. But Jesus is going to prove to us once again that the depth of the love always creates the vulnerability of a deep betrayal. And he's going to experience the betrayal, because out of this upper room experience, right there in this moment, one of them goes and gets the chief priest and the religious leaders, his name is Judas, is going to betray Jesus, remember? And then things are going to get really crazy. And then one of the closest, which is Peter, within a few hours, he's going to deny Jesus. Not once, not twice. How many times is he going to deny Jesus? Three times. So it seems to me that Jesus, the more that he trusted, the more that he loved, the more that he spent time with these guys, those are the guys that are going to hurt him the most. So let me say this to you. I'm going to say this again. Because I've been married for almost 20 years. July is going to be 20 years. This is what I'm trying to tell you. As a man of 20 years of marriage, there is no one on the face of this earth, no single individual on the face of this earth that can potentially hurt me the most than my wife. Why? Because that's the person that I love the most. Does that make sense? So the more that you love, the more that you can potentially get hurt. It's just, it is unavoidable. It goes hand in hand. And what Jesus is trying to tell us is that although you may go through the valley of the shadow and death, although tonight may be the mixed emotions of the loss of a loved one, and in this case of mom, and for many of you, grandma, and whatever the case may be, look at me for a second. Looking at the pictures, it was worth it. Huh? Come on, talk to me. Wasn't worth it? Would you do that all over again? Of course you would. I can assure you that. Because it's always worth it. Love is worth it. The understanding that Jesus comes and says, it is in my Father's house that has many rooms. If that were not so, and then he brings this kind of a difficult question. Would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? In other words, the relationship that he is my Father and that he has prepared many rooms for us is based, watch this please, is based that my relationship with my Father, which is extremely close, right? Father and Son, is for the purpose to involve you in that relationship. And I want to just make sure that we get this point very, very clear. Every single relationship in your life and my life, and tonight is the perfect example. When you read, and I know Robert is coming to read the eulogy in just a second, but have you noticed that every relationship affects others either positively or negatively? And in this case, Jesus says, my relationship with my Heavenly Father that allows us to have many rooms, not just for me, but for who? And he's from Texas, so he says, y'all, all of you. He's implying that the reason why he came to the world is not just to satisfy the Father or just to improve the relationship with the Father, is that the relationship was means to an end. And in this case, what's the end? The end is you. And he's talking to the disciples, and although they're going to betray him, he could easily said, it's only for those who do not betray me. No, he says, it's for everyone whosoever believes in Jesus and confesses that he is Lord, he will be in that place that he describes, the many rooms, the Father's house. Verse 3, he says, and if I go and prepare a place for you, watch this, please. If I go and prepare a place for you, look at the beautiful thing. I will come back and I will take you to be with me. Why? For the purpose that you also may be where I am. Hollywood makes billions of dollars trying to give us the details of what the Bible apparently is a little quiet, a little silent, which is the afterlife. I know everyone wants to know about the afterlife and how this is going to be, but I want you to hear this very, very closely for me. I believe, this is my take on the Bible. I believe the reason why the Bible does not give us specifics of how is it going to be when we get there, well, for once is that we wouldn't understand it. Because our minds are finite. We're confined, but anyways, I don't have time to get into these details, but all that I'm trying to tell you is, listen to the words of Jesus. The Father has many rooms, they're for you. I'm fixing to go, you don't agree with that, and you are going to suffer when you see me, how I go. But the way I am going and how I am going and why I am going is so you can be where I am. And this is the thing. I am coming back so I can take you with me. And hear me say this. Heaven is a physical place, but heaven ultimately is a person. Heaven is a person, and his name is Jesus. So if you, as you sit in this place, if you're coming to a place like this and you celebrate the life of this beautiful lady, and knowing the journey that she took on this earth, these verses apply to her. We know exactly where she's at. It's not simply that she is in heaven, but it's that she is with Jesus. Because I can tell you this once again. Married for 20 years. I love marriage. When I got married, I was ready to settle down, brother. I was 24, 25. And I was like, no more of this single life. Let's seal the deal. I was ready to parent some children, so we have 3 kids. But here's what I have learned after 20 years of marriage. As much as I love marriage is means to an end. For me, is the girl. In other words, I don't want to get married to anybody else. I could if I wanted to, right? But guess what? It's not about marriage. This is what I always tell people at church. Don't fight for your marriage. Fight for the person. Because you can always build a marriage with somebody else. So what I'm trying to tell you is that this is not just about going to heaven. It's about the person that makes heaven, heaven. And his name is Jesus. And this Jesus simply closes with these words. He says, you know the way to the place where I am going. If you come back tomorrow, I'm going to continue the movie. Just describing, because this statement of Jesus, you know the way to the place where I am going. That wasn't the case. They didn't know, because then you go into the next verse, which is not on your bulletin, but you come back tomorrow and I'll read it for you. It's basically that question where Thomas, the doubter, says, no, we don't. Where are you going? It's like the whole talk just went over his head, because they kept on thinking that the purpose of Messiah was to simply to change the circumstances, the pain and the suffering and the calamities and the chaos in their time in history. And I'm here to tell you, we do need some help in our world. It's pretty broken, wouldn't you agree? It's difficult, right? But at the same time, Jesus reminds us that where he's at, he has prepared a place, which I hope, and you have the certainty tonight, that for you, heaven is not simply a place. It's literally a person, and that person is Jesus. Would you pray with me, please?